Welcome everyone to this first bidder information webcast for the 2018 BGS or Basic Generation Service Auctions. My name is Chantal Lacasse. I have with me Paul Cardona from NERA as well to present today. And we have personnel from the electric distribution companies or EDCs as well to help answer your questions. The purpose of today's webcast is to present the EDC's proposal for procuring supply for their BGS customers. And I'll be reminding you at various points in the presentation today that it is still a proposal that's before the Board of Public Utilities, and the board is expected to render a decision on the proposal in mid-November 2017. You were given instructions on how to ask a question, and you can do that throughout the presentation in writing through the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen, so not the chat, but the Q&A. Please select all panelists so that everyone that is answering questions today can see your question, and you can click send to submit it. In addition to the end of the presentation, we'll try as we can to address questions as we go along and receive them, and we will also pause roughly in the middle of the presentation and answer questions that we may have received at that time. While we are on housekeeping items, just a quick disclaimer that we'll be doing throughout this presentation is providing summaries of various documents and agreements, and those are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by our reference to the governing documents, which is the joint proposal of EDCs and all the documents that are included in that proposal. Your main source of information for the BGS auction is the BGS auction website, bgs-auction.com, and the EDC's joint proposal and all the documents are posted under the auction tab on the BGS proceeding page of the website. The presentation today will cover and summarize various aspects of the EDC's proposal, including the roles of the EDCs, the auction manager, as well as the staff and advisor for the board, providing an overview of the proposal and going into more of the details on the products, the auction process, including the calendar, bidding in the auction, so the actual auction format for the submission and evaluations of bid. And then I will pass it along to Mr. Cardona to review the application process in a little bit more detail, as well as sources of information for potential participants, including the BGS auction website. So starting with the roles, NERA is the auction manager for the BGS auction, and that means that we assure the interface with bidders. We handle the qualifications of bidders for the auction and also manage the auction itself. We do that on behalf of the EDCs or electric distribution companies, that is PSE&G, Public Service Electric and Gas, Jersey Central, Power and Light, JCP&L, ACE, Atlantic City Electric, as well as Rockland Electric or RICO. EDCs are responsible for major policy decisions and make the filing of the proposal with the Board of the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, and that's abbreviated throughout the presentation as either BPU or Board. The auction is monitored by the BPU staff as well as the advisor to the board, and both the BPU staff and the board advisor are also consulted on various decisions throughout the auction process. The board, as I mentioned, is expected to render a decision on the joint proposal from the EDCs in the November timeframe. And once the auction is conducted, the board will render a decision on the results of the auction within 2 business days of the conclusion of bidding. At that point, if the board approves the auction results, then those results become binding on the winning bidders and the EDCs. So in the next few slides, I'll provide an overview of the BGS auction, and I will provide an overview of the auction as it's proposed to be conducted this year and as it has been conducted over the past few years. There's two essential goals to the auction process: to procure supply for the BGS customers at a cost that's consistent with the market, and also to enable participation of a broad spectrum of entities, including energy trading and marketing companies, who can participate by aggregating a portfolio of wholesale products and providing price risk management services. The building blocks of the BGS auction process have been stable over the years, and I will mention some of these blocks here and will provide more information regarding these throughout the presentation. First of all, the BGS auction is a single statewide process. That means that all offers for all the BGS load not already procured is solicited through a single process. So by all BGS load, we mean all BGS customers, but we also mean that the process involves all of the EDCs, electric distribution companies. The product for the auction is a full requirements product. That means that suppliers would provide all components of supply that's required to serve BGS customers, including load following energy, capacity transmission, ancillary services, and any other services that may be required by PJM. We talk about tranches for the first time in this bullet. So a tranche is going to be a percentage of the BGS load for a given EDC, and winning one tranche means that the supplier is responsible for that given percentage of the load for that EDC and for providing all services necessary to serve that percentage of the load. The auction format in the EDC's proposal is a descending clock auction. We'll provide more details again later on in the presentation, but at a high level, the descending clock auction is a multiple round auction where, as long as in a given round there are more bids than the number of tranches of the load that's needed, then the price is ticked down and bidders have an opportunity to bid again at a lower price. There's also a contingency plan that's part of the EDC's proposal, and any supply that's not procured at the auction is to be purchased through PJM administered markets. So we say there's the single statewide process, but that process is divided into two auctions. These auctions are separate, but are held concurrently. The first auction is the BGS CIEP auction, CIEP for commercial and industrial energy pricing, and that is to procure supply for larger customers that are on an hourly price plan. And by larger customers, I mean certain customers in certain rate classes at transmission voltages, as well as customers that have demand over 500 kW. The auction, the BGS CIEP auction, determines a price for each EDC that's called the CIEP price in dollars per megawatt day. And suppliers are paid this price on the basis of the capacity obligations of the customers. There are other payments, and those are more fully specified in the supplier master agreement. We'll talk about those in a minute. That's the standard contract that winning suppliers would sign with the EDCs should they be winners at the BGS CIEP auction. So there are additional payments, including being paid the real-time PJM hourly price for energy, predetermined rates for ancillary services and for transmission, and suppliers are also paid what's called the CIEP standby fee. And importantly, the CIEP standby fee is levied on all CIEP customers, so not just customers that take BGS CIEP as a service, but also on customers that are shopping or taking service from third-party suppliers. So that's the first of two auctions for the larger customers. So there's a second auction for smaller customers, which is the BGS RSCP auction for residential small commercial pricing. And that includes all residential customers, all smaller commercial or industrial customers with demand of less than 500 kW. Those customers are on a stable price, and the auction determines an all-in price, so all-in meaning for all the components of supply that BGS suppliers are required to provide, an all-in price in cents per kilowatt hour. Suppliers are paid this price, so the winning price or the price for a given EDC determined through the auction for every kilowatt hour of load served. Now, technically, there is a seasonal factor that would be multiplied, one for the winter and one for the summer, that would be multiplied for this auction price, but these factors are set to one so that on a practical basis, suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour. Each of the auction has a single term, by which we mean a single supply period, and has four products that can be bid upon during the auction. So for the BGS CIEP auction, the supply period is 1 year. So for this upcoming period would be from June 1, 2018 to May 31st, 2019. And every year, the entirety of the supply for BGS CIEP customers is procured through the auction. There's roughly 3,000 megawatts on an eligible basis in the BGS CIEP auction. And when I say eligible basis, I mean both customers that are taking BGS CIEP that are on the service and customers that are shopping or taking service from a third-party supplier. There are four products in the auction, whereby product, we mean the BGS CIEP load for a given EDC. Similarly, for the BGS RSCP auction, there are also four products, which is going to be the BGS RSCP load for a given EDC. Here, the supply period is 3 years, from June 1, 2018 to May 31, 2021 for the upcoming auction. And every year, the BGS RSCP auction procures one-third of the supply for a period of 3 years. So it's a rolling procurement structure. And there are approximately 5,000 or 5,200, I think, for this year, megawatts at auction this year. So that represents one-third of the statewide load. So I mentioned how suppliers are paid and the entirety or a portion of the payment is based on the auction prices that are determined. Similarly, the customer rates are also based on the auction prices. So for the BGS RSCP customers, as we mentioned, at a given point in time, they are served by suppliers that have won at three different auctions given the rolling procurement structure. So the auction prices for those three auctions determine an average cost for each EDC that is seasonally adjusted and tranche-weighted given the number of tranches that are procured in each of those three auctions. And to determine rate, that average cost is converted to a retail rate using ratios or conversion factors. So those ratios or conversion factors then represent how much more or less expensive than the average a particular rate class is. Classes typically have seasonal rates, and some classes also have time-of-day rates. On the BGS CIEP side, as we mentioned, the auction determines a final CIEP price that the customers pay for their capacity obligations, but just as was the case for suppliers that had other payment components, there are other portions to the rate for customers as well, including the real-time PJM hourly price for energy, a predetermined ancillary service rate a predetermined transmission rate, and the option fee. And as I mentioned, the option fee is paid not just by those customers that do take PGS-CIEP, but also by customers that take service from a third-party suppliers and would, if they were to come back to PGS, do so on a CIEP rate. That concludes a very kind of brief overview to give you the big categories of the statewide process in terms of the two auctions. And we'll talk a little bit more now about the supplier's role in these two auctions and highlight some of the terms of the BGS Supplier Master Agreement. So I mentioned the seasonal factors briefly when I was talking about the BGS RSCP payment for suppliers. So the seasonal factors are part of the EDC's proposal, and in the filing that was made by EDCs on June 30th, the seasonal factors are proposed to be one for both summer and winter this year. There may be updates to that, but that is the current situation. So the load, we've talked about tranches a little bit already by calling the product in the auction full requirements tranches. So this slide provides an overview of how those tranches are derived. So first of all, on an aggregate basis, the BGS load is the total retail load in a given EDC's territory minus the load served by third-party suppliers, so TPSs or third-party suppliers. So that represents the load of shopping customers. So in other words, the customers or the load that's on the service is the non-shopping load, which is the retail minus the shopping load. For the BGS CIEP load, that represents the load of all customers that are served at transmission voltages and the loads of other larger customers, as we mentioned, for demand 500 kW or greater. All of those customers are interval metered. And finally, for RSCP load, the RSCP load is basically the residual of the total BGS load less the CIEP load as measured by the meters. Each of the BGS CIEP load and BGS RSCP load is then divided into a number of tranches for each EDC, and each tranche represents a given percentage of that load. And we'll see in the slides that follows that the way those tranches are determined is by having a target nominal wet megawatts for those tranches. Now, something important to note is that BGS customers are free to come and go from BGS. They have to provide appropriate notice to the EDCs, which is 20 days before their next scheduled meeting reading date. Also note that BGS suppliers are the load-serving entity for that percentage of the EDC's load corresponding to the number of tranches that they have won at the auction, with a role that's much like the role of the third-party supplier. So I'll go into a little bit more detail on the tranches that are proposed to be in the upcoming auction. So as I mentioned, the total CIEP load is expected to be about 3,200 megawatts. So just a reminder that that's always on an eligible basis, and we'll provide statistics in a couple of slides on how much of that load is actually shopping. So tranche is a fixed percentage of the BGS CIEP load that represents approximately 75 megawatts. So you can see that's what's called a megawatt measure in the table. So it's approximately 75 megawatts, except for RICO, it's a little bit lower, given that RICO has a single tranche. So given that megawatt measure and given the CIEP peak load share for each of the EDCs, that translates into a certain number of tranches, and then a certain percentage of the BGS CIEP load for each tranche. So, for example, with PSE&G, with a megawatt measure of approximately 75 megawatts, given the peak load share of 1,900 megawatts, that's approximately 25 tranches. So each tranche then represents 4% of the BGS CIEP load of PSE&G. So those are the tranches that will be up for bid at the auction. Of note that there is a load cap, or there's a limit on the number of tranches that any one supplier can bid and win at the auction, and that per a prior board order for the BGS CIAP auction has been set at 45% of the tranches available on a statewide basis. So no limit in terms of bidding or winning tranches for a particular EDC, but there is a limit on a statewide basis. So I've pointed out that the measure that we had provided were on an eligible basis, and one thing that I'll mention as well is that the data from the prior slide is as of the filing for the EDC in June. We're expecting an update to the CIAP peak load share in the November timeframe. And because of that, the number of tranches, given that that depends on the amount of CIAP peak load share for each EDC, the number of tranches you've seen there could go up or down depending on the update of the data in November. There will be an announcement in mid-November as to the final number of tranches to the BGS CIAP auction and the final megawatt measures and percentage associated with each tranche for each EDC. So the migration for customers in the CIAP class is quite substantial. The number that you have there give you approximately statewide on an average basis, 73% of the accounts and 85% of the load. That was as of the statistics on August 31st, 2017. These statistics are updated on a regular basis, and in the second part of the presentation, we'll show you where you can look at the migration statistics that are provided in the data room of the BGS auction website. So in terms of rewards and risks associated with supplying BGS CIEP, so first a reminder that this is a full requirements product. Even with energy price as a real-time market supplier for the BGS CIEP customers does provide all of the services that are required to serve those customers. And the BGS CIEP supplier does get a stable revenue because the CIEP standby fee is collected on the entire CIEP customer base and not just from BGS CIEP customers. So basically, it's stable because it's the revenue base is on both the shopping and the non-shopping customers. The BGS CIAP supplier also has the ability to arbitrage the day-ahead and real-time market, given that it's getting paid on the real-time market. There are risks, of course, with providing this service, including the risk of migration from or return to the BGS CIAP product. There's also risk in that the BGS CIAP suppliers are paid a fixed dollar per megawatt hour for ancillary services, is proposed at $6 per megawatt hour, which may be different, may be a risk or an opportunity, may be different from actual ancillary service costs. So we'll talk in the same way a little bit about the BGS RSCP products as well as the supplier's role and the migration for the larger of the RSCP customers. So this year, the total RSCP load is expected to be about 5,200 megawatts. You have here the number of tranches, megawatt measures, and the tranche sizes, where the tranche size is a percentage of the BGS RSCP load for that EDC. Again, the data that you're seeing here represent the data as of the date of the filing, and we are expecting an update in the November timeframe. The tranches here for BGS CIP was approximately 75 megawatts. For BGS RSCP, the megawatt is approximately 100 megawatts. Here, the number of tranches will not change, though. So if there is an update to the data, the number of tranches you see here, or the number of tranches that will be auctioned, However, the megawatt measure might change. So to take an example, and you have to remember that what you're seeing here is what is at the auction this year. It's not the total number of tranches and total number of megawatts on a statewide basis. So to take as an example, Rockland Electric or RECO, they have approximately 400 megawatt in total, and there's approximately one-third that's being procured each year. In their case, it's going to be one tranche this year. They have one tranche in two of the auctions and two tranches in the third auction. So with four tranches in total, each tranche is 25%. So that means that the BGS RSCP supplier would be supplying 25% of the BGS RSCP load for RECO, and the megawatt measure is approximately 100 megawatts. So as I mentioned, the dividing line or CIP line or threshold between CIP customers and RSCP customers is at 500 kW. That is what is being proposed. Is the EDC's proposal is to continue with the CIP threshold at that level. That is something that the board can consider and that we would expect to be part, either leaving it at a 500 kW or changing it to another level, that would be part of the board decision that we're expecting in November. For the larger customers in the RSCP class, the migration is similar to the migration that we showed for the CIP customers, with roughly 85% of accounts and load having migrated to third-party suppliers. The migration for smaller customer is not as large. In particular, residential migration is approximately 15% on a statewide basis. Again, there are more migration data series that are provided in the data room. Those are updated on a monthly basis, and we'll go through those a little later on in the presentation. The BGS RSCP supplier role is to assemble a portfolio of wholesale products and provide price risk management service to be able to provide all the components of supply for BGS RSCP customers. There are risks to providing those services. There's various wholesale sources from which to procure those components, and there's various risks associated with that, including the potential migration or the return to BGS RSCP service of customers, given that this is a fixed price or stable price type service. There are also load and weather risks, fuel price risks, et cetera. And given that it is a three-year contract term, a three-year supply period, there are additional risks because there could be changes to the RSCP class composition. So I just mentioned that the proposal is to maintain the CIP threshold at 500 kW, but should that change, and it would be going down, so should that go down, that is a risk that the BGS RSCP supplier takes. Similarly, the rate design as proposed by the EDCs in their joint proposal this year is for a period of 1 year, and there is the possibility that the rate design would change in the future, and again, that is a risk for the BGS RSCP supplier. So we've talked at a high level about the products and the component of the product, and all those elements are fully described in the standard contract, which is the supplier master agreement. There are two supplier master agreements, one for BGS CIEP and one for BGS RSCP. Those supplier master agreements are part of the EDC's joint proposal, so are posted both on the BGS proceeding page under the auction tab and on the contract and credit page under the bidder info tab, so both places. And as we will see, once the board has approved the proposal or modified the proposal as appropriate, the final agreement, as will have been approved by the board prior to the auction, will then become standard statewide. They are non-negotiable, and bidders, as part of their Part 1 application will be agreeing to the terms of those agreements. Now, the opportunities to comment on the agreements are now in the past. They were during the regulatory proceeding with initial comments due on September 6th, and there was also a legislative type board hearing on September 28th, and the deadline for final comments, for which new issues cannot be raised, but simply in response to the prior comments, are due on October 13th. So I'll certainly not do a comprehensive review of the document, and certainly invited to go see the documents on the VGS Auction website, as I mentioned, but I will highlight some of the provisions of the supplier master agreement, the first being, as we've talked about, a little bit about the services that VGS supplier must provide, but we should also mention that the BGS supplier is responsible for compliance with the RPS, or the Renewable Portfolio Standard, and that compliance with the RPS is by providing renewable energy credits, or RECs. So BGS suppliers are responsible for that during the supply period. There is a requirement in terms of compliance with Class 1 and Class 2 RECs, as well as for SRECs or solar RECs, and that must be demonstrated. And to demonstrate that and to transfer those RECs, suppliers must be registered in GAAP and must have a retail LSC account so that they can transfer those renewable energy credits or solar renewable energy credits to the EDCs. Now, for those of you who have participated in the past, the EDCs had at one point RECs to provide to BGS suppliers, but that is no longer the case. So none of the EDCs have any RECs to provide to BGS suppliers. In terms of the credit provision, just a quick note on the credit provisions under the supplier master agreement. So there is a financial guarantees that are required during the term of the supplier master agreement for BGS CIEP. It's a fixed amount per tranche called a credit exposure at $70,000 per tranche. For the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, there are two separate requirements. One is also a fixed amount per tranche, but it's $2.4 million per tranche at the beginning of the supply period, so representing a three-year tranche, and then it declines over the term of the contract. And there's also a mark-to-market exposure requirement. Now, BGS suppliers of the guarantor can be provided an unsecured credit line under the terms of the supplier master agreement, and that's on a sliding scale that depends both on the credit rating and on the tangible net worth, or TNW. Any financial guarantees that are to be provided under the terms of the BGS supplier agreement can be provided in the form of a guarantee, a letter of credit, or cash. Now, also of note is that if the BGS supplier holds various agreements with the EDCs, then the unsecured credit line and the credit limit depend on all of the BGS obligations. So I mentioned for RSCP, there's two separate requirements, mark-to-market and an independent credit requirement. And similarly, a BGS supplier can obtain two different credit limits or unsecured credit, one for the mark-to-market together with the CIEP credit exposure of $70,000 per tranche, and the second one for the RSCP independent credit requirement. There's also a specific section of the supplier master agreement that I'll talk about now, in part because the EDCs have proposed change or enhancement or clarification to this section as part of their proposal this year. So section 15.9 of the supplier master agreement deals with changes in transmission-related charges, and generally speaking, it provides for the recovery of and payment adjustments for changes in transmission-related charges that occur over the term of the BGS contract. Now, this requires a filing by the EDCs, and it also requires an approval by the board. But upon a transmission rate change, then the EDCs do file with the board so that they can collect any increase. It could be a change in any direction, but in any increase in transmission rate for customers, and they do that for the benefit of BGS suppliers. The EDCs have proposed, as I said, a clarification to this section this year to make explicit that Section 59 is applicable in cases of transmission cost reallocations implemented by PJM or any other change that effectively alters the transmission-related costs for BGS suppliers. It also clarifies that the EDC may file with the board before a final FERC order is issued. All right. So as I said, this is by no means a complete review of the terms of the and provisions of the supplier master agreement, but just calling out a few areas of importance for you. And again, you're invited to go see the documents as filed by the EDC. So the next section on the auction process, I'll be going through the events from basically now until the auction, providing a calendar, and also pointing out to you that there are opportunities going on right now to comment on some of the credit instruments so that you still have some time if you are considering participation to provide those comments. So although no comments on the supplier master agreement are entertained anymore by the board, the EDCs are entertaining comments on some of the credit instruments. So before I go there, just another reminder that what we're talking about here is strictly a proposal that's before the board, so that the board order that will be coming in November will decide on all aspects of that proposal and will determine if the proposals approve or how it would be amended. So it's certainly possible that the way we're describing the auction rules, the supplier master agreement, or even the process and the calendar and any of the terms at when it is approved by the board may be different from what we're describing here. And you will be entirely responsible for reading the final documents as approved by the board. We'll certainly be providing those on the BGS auction website. We're also going to be holding a second bidder information webcast in the late November, early December timeframe to summarize for you the decision by the board and any changes to the agreements or auction process as will have been decided by the board. So this is a summary of some of the main events on the auction process, starting, as I mentioned, with the expected board decision on the EDC proposal. In roughly the same time frame, the auction manager will announce various auction parameters. So we'll be announcing the tranche sizes. So as I mentioned, for CIP, the number of tranches may change and the tranche size may change. For RSCP, the megawatt measure may change for the tranches. We'll be announcing the final load caps. So I mentioned the low cap for the BGS CIP auction at 45% of the tranches. There's also low caps for the BGS RSCP auction. There's a statewide low cap like there is for BGS CIP, but there are also EDC low caps. So there are also limits on the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win for each EDC. The minimum and maximum starting prices refer to a range of prices, and the prices for round one of the auction, so where we start the auction, are selected in that range. So that range for both the CIP auction and the RSCP auction will be announced in that November 15th announcement. The application process is in two parts. The part one application will have a deadline of noon on December 12th. So the first part of the application process is before the holidays. The second part of the application process is after the holidays. So an interested party that applies to qualify for the auction with the Part 1 application, such a party, if they are successful, becomes a qualified bidder and is then invited to submit a Part 2 application. And the Part 2 application will be due January 10th by noon. And if a qualified bidder is successful in that second part of the process, then the party becomes a registered bidder. There are various other events, so by all means, it's not a complete calendar. There's also going to be a third bidder information webcast that will be aimed strictly at registered bidders after the pool of registered bidders has been determined to prepare registered bidders for the auction. And there's also a trial auction so that bidders can practice the bid submission procedures that will be between the Part 2 application deadline and the auction itself. 3 days before each of the auctions, so the auction do not start on the same day. They can be concurrent from the second day, but the BGS CIP auction starts before the BGS RSCP auction. So the BGS CIP starts on the Friday, and the BGS RSCP start on the Monday. 3 days before the start, then the auction manager will inform bidders of the starting prices, so the actual round one price that will be selected in the range of the minimum and maximum starting price that will be announced on November 15th. So I mentioned that there are still opportunities to comment. So one thing that applies to all bidders is the opportunity to comment on the letters of credit. So there are two types of letters of credit, I would say. What I will call, to be able to make the distinction, the post-auction letter of credit. That's the letter of credit that's appended to the BGS Supplier Master Agreement and that can be used by bidders to post financial guarantees during the supply period. There are also pre-auction letters of credit, one for RSCP, one for CIEP, and every qualified bidder that is submitting a Part 2 application must provide a pre-auction letter of credit as financial guarantees for their indicative offers, which are number of tranches, maximum number of tranches that you're willing to bid at the minimum and at the maximum starting price that will be provided in the Part 2 application. So you have the opportunity to provide comments, to work with your financial institution and see whether there are terms where they want to propose any modifications. The previous accepted modification, so previously by, I mean in, from previous auctions, and that remain acceptable to the EDCs, have been or will shortly be posted to the BGS auction website. And you can consult those as you're working with your financial institution to see whether there are additional modifications that may be required by your financial institution. So how do you provide those comments and what are the deadlines? The way you provide the comments is by providing a red line of the letters of credit. Those are available on the BGS auction website. Again, you can go to the Bidder Info tab and the contract and credit page, and the letters of credit are there, one for RSCP, one for CIEP. The format of those two letters are basically the same, but they do refer to the documents and the auction, either the BGS CIEP auction or the BGS RSCP auction. So as a BGS RSCP bidder, for example, you have to use the BGS RSCP letter of credit. So you can provide a red line of that letter of credit to us by email at bgs-auction@nira.com. Then the EDCs will consider the modification and would either revise the standard form or approve the use of the change that you've proposed as a modification on an optional basis or reject the proposed modification. If your modification is approved for use on an optional basis, then it will become a part of the list of the acceptable modifications that are posted to the BGS auction website, and then any participants, any bidder, can then use that modification if they wish. The deadline to provide your comments on the letters of credit, so both the post-auction letter of credit and the pre-auction letter of credit, is noon on October 24th. The EDCs, as I said, will consider those modifications, and you will receive from the auction manager an individual response to your comments, and we will also post all modifications acceptable on an optional basis on November 6th. So I mentioned that the comment process for the letter of credit really is of interest to all potential participants because all participants will be required to submit a pre-auction letter of credit with their Part 2 application. Cash is not an option. There are no other option unless you want to do a bid bond. There's a second process going on, which is the alternate guarantee process. That doesn't apply to everyone. That applies to a narrower set of bidders, namely those potential bidders that may have corporate policies that prevent them from using the standard form of guarantee as appended to the supplier master agreement. If that's the case, you may apply or provide to the EDC an alternate guarantee, and if you do that, there's a specific list of minimum requirements that any alternate form of guarantee must satisfy, and that, again, is posted to the BGS auction website on the bidder info tab and the contract and credit page. In particular, that alternate form of guarantee must be for unlimited liability. As a note, the standard guarantee appended to the supplier master agreement has a liability limit. The deadlines are very similar. Any submission for an alternate guarantee form must be received by the auction manager by noon, October 24th. Again, you can make that submission by email to bgs-auction@nera.com, and you would have a decision from the EDCs whether your alternate form of guarantee is acceptable in the early November timeframe. All right, so the last section before we take a little bit of a pause and consider your question is an overview of bidding in the auction. And the main purpose of this section is to provide a little more detail without going into all the fine rules of the auction, but a little more detail on the auction format. As I mentioned at the outset, the auction format is a standard building block of the approach proposed by the EDC, and the auction format that is proposed is a clock auction. So remember, there are two auctions, BGS RSCP, BGS CIEP, so those are conducted separately, but the BGS RSCP load for all EDCs is procured in one auction, and the BGS CIEP load for all EDCs is procured in another. So that means that fundamentally, the design of a descending clock auction is a multi-product design with all tranches from all EDCs procured at once. As I mentioned briefly at the outset, it's also a multi-round design in that bidding proceeds in rounds. There are prices that are suggested prices because there's a price for each EDC, which may be different. So prices are suggested by the auction manager, and suppliers then state how many tranches they want to supply at those prices that are suggested by the auction manager. At the end of the round, after the auction manager tabulates how many tranches are bid by all suppliers, if there is excess supply for an EDC, so there are more tranches bid for that EDC than are needed for the load that's at auction, then the price for that EDC will tick down. the price ticks down in the following round, suppliers can, of course, leave their bids unchanged, but they can also switch their bids from one EDC to another in a given auction. And suppliers get to bid again, save the number of tranches they want to supply, and the prices continue ticking down until we reach a point where the number of tranches that are bid are equal to the tranches that are needed for that particular auction, and that is the end of the auction. Now, I'll be giving some examples in the slide that follow and talking about prices, so I just want to make a note here that when I'm talking about a price on the BGS RSCP side, I mean the all-in price in cents per kilowatt hour, but if I'm talking about the BGS CIP auction, then the price is the CIP price that's paid on the capacity obligation, and that is in dollars per megawatt day. So I'll give a little bit of an example using two rounds of the process by which the prices come down from one round to the next. So in this particular example, you have round one of the auction. So the starting prices, as we call them when we talked a little bit about the calendar and auction, of the auction process, the starting prices or round one prices are 15 cents per kilowatt hour for all EDCs. So just to note, that it doesn't need to be like that. Prices could be different. So this is illustrative only. So those prices are provided to suppliers. Suppliers state the number of tranches that they're willing to bid at those prices for each of the EDCs. When the number of tranches bid are tabulated, they're compared to the number of tranches that are needed. So that's in the column number bid and number to buy in the slide that you have before you. So as an example, for PSE&G, the number of tranches bid is 79. And the tranche target, or the number of tranche needed, is 29. So that results in an excess supply of 79 minus 29 of 50. So that means that for PSE&G, the price will go down in the next round. The amount by which the price will go down is determined by a decrement. And a decrement is a specific port function that is dependent on a parameter called the oversupply ratio that's provided to you in the last column of that table. And the oversupply ratio is basically the ratio of the excess supply on that particular EDC to the maximum possible excess supply that could be on that EDC. So as an example, for PSE&G, the excess supply is 50 tranches. The excess supply in the entire auction is 50 plus 17 plus 2, 69. And that means that the excess supply range that would be reported to bidders during the auction, the top of that range would be 70. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. So the oversupply ratio is calculated as the actual excess supply in the EDC 50 divided by a measure of the maximum excess supply that could be on that EDC, which could be the entire excess supply of the entire auction or 70, and 50 divided by 70 is the 0.714 that you see there. So the oversupply ratio are calculated in the same manner for the other EDCs. And we note right away that for RICO, there's one tranche bid, and there's one tranche that are needed. The excess supply is zero. So that there's two consequences to that. First, the price for RICO will not tick down in the next round. But second, it doesn't mean that the auction is over for RICO and the product is closed, then that's the final price. Because remember that bidders can always switch their bids from one EDC to another, so it's certainly possible that more tranches will be bid on RICO at a later point in time. So that means that the bidding must stop on all EDCs at once, so it doesn't stop on one and continue on the other. So the example provides the prices then for round two, so you will see that, as I mentioned, the price for RICO has not ticked down, so it is maintained at 15 cents per kilowatt hour. The price for the other EDCs has ticked down for each of the EDC, and roughly speaking, the more excess supply there was in round one, the greater was the oversupply ratio, and the greater is the price tick down. So the price tick down is greatest for PSE&G that had a 0.71 oversupply ratio, which you can think of as being that there was 71% of the maximum possible excess supply that was actually on PSE&G in round one. So those prices have gone down the most. Suppliers then are asked again to state the number of tranches that they're willing to bid or supply at the new prices for round two. And you can see that there was some movement here, so the number of tranches bid on PSE&G went from 79 to 61, but the other way around on JCP&L from 37 to 40. So that means that some bidders have switched into, so increased the tranches they bid for JCP&L and for RICO as well. There were also suppliers that decreased the number of tranches that they bid in total, and you can see that by looking either at the sum of the total number of tranches bid or the excess supply in the auction, which used to be 69 and is now 58. So in this particular round, there is more tranches bid than tranches needed for all of the EDCs, which means that the prices are going to come down in round three for all of the EDCs, and the precise amount of the decrement or the decrease in price would be calculated on the basis of the oversupply ratio that you see here. So there are four auction features that I want to highlight for you. One is that the offers that are provided in a bid are binding, and one consequence of that is if the price on a product, so if the price on the load for one EDC in a given auction is not reduced in a round, then a bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches that they bid on that product. So that means the bidder cannot take away tranches because they want to reduce their tranches in total, they want to withdraw from the auction. They cannot reduce the number of tranches they bid on that EDC because they prefer to switch somewhere else. So there was a bid provided at a given price, the price didn't change, then the offer must be maintained. The second feature is that the total number of tranches bid cannot increase from one round to the next. So although you can switch and increase the number of tranches you bid on a particular EDC, you cannot, in the aggregate, increase the total number of tranches that you bid. So that means that the maximum number of tranches that you bid, have to have that in round one. It can only go down from there. And as we'll discuss in the latter part of the presentation, the number of tranches that you bid in round one is determined by your indicative offer in the Part 2 application. So that really has to represent the maximum number of tranches that you're willing to bid at the maximum starting price. As I mentioned when I was going through the example, the auction closes on all products at once, so it's not because there's a balance between number of tranches bid and needed for one EDC that it closes at that point, because there's always the opportunity for suppliers to switch back to that EDC and create the excess supply that will bring the prices down some more. Finally, the auction format has a uniform price, so that means all the winners on a product are given the same price. So I mentioned that the auction format is multiple round. There's a further subdivision that is within each round. There are different phases to the round. So there's a bidding phase when the round starts, where the suppliers know the going prices, so the prices for each product or the prices for the load of each of the EDCs in that auction. And bidders submit their bids in the bidding phase, which are a number of tranches for each EDC that suppliers are willing to bid and serve at those prices for the round. When bidding ends and before information is released to bidders, so that's an important feature of the descending clock auction format, is that bidders do get information that during the reporting phase of the round that can help refine and modify their bidding strategy as needed. That information is an indication of the excess supply in the round. So again, I think I mentioned that when we were going through the calculation of the oversupply ratio. By indication of excess supply, we really mean that there's a range for the total excess supply in the auction that's provided to bidders. So a range, for example, from 56 to 60 tranches, that would be the type of range. So the actual excess supply lies within that range, but it's not the exact excess supply that is provided to bidders. It's a range instead. And bidders are also provided with the prices for the next round at which they will submit their bids. So a reminder that the price for each EDC ticks down only if the number of tranches bid on that EDC is greater than the tranches needed. So between that bidding phase and the moment where bidders will have access to information, the reporting phase, there are also calculating phase, which is a period of time during which bidders can no longer submit bids but do not yet have access to that information, and it's the time during which the auction manager tabulates and calculates the results. So we've talked about bids already a little bit. In round one, the bid is very simple. It's going to be a number of tranches for each of the EDC. Something else that can happen in round one is that the volume can be reduced. It would only be reduced if it's necessary to do so to ensure the competitiveness of the bidding environment. And if it is reduced, it will be reduced to the number of tranches bid divided by a particular parameter called the target eligibility ratio. For example, if the number of tranches bid was 60 tranches and the target eligibility ratio was 1.5, then the volume would be reduced to 60 divided by 1.5 or 40. So at that point, it would be 60 tranches bid for 40 tranches in the volume, or 1.5 tranches bid for every tranche needed, and that's what the target eligibility ratio represents. For bidding in subsequent rounds, so in round one, it's very simple, number of tranches for each of the EDCs. In subsequent round, bidders can always leave their bids unchanged, or if the price for an EDC has ticked down, bidders can reduce the number of tranches they wish to provide, either reduce in total and withdraw those tranches from the auction altogether, or by bidding those tranches on one or several others of the EDC, that is, switching their bids from one EDC to another. I talked about the reporting phase and stated that there's information that's provided to bidders, so this slide summarizes that. So there's going to be a range for the total excess supply in the auction. The ranges that are used are in the auction rules document. So you can see what those ranges of excess supply are going to look like. Typically, the upper end of the range is a number that's divisible by 5, and there's a certain number of integer in that range, 5, 10, 15, 20. In addition to that information, which is information that is the total supply ranges and the prices for the next round, so all of the bidders see the same information there. In addition to that information, bidders also get an individual report about their own bid. So you get the results of your own bid as well in a separate report, but you cannot see the report of other bidders' bids, other information about bidders, whether their eligibility, their identity, or whatever during the auction. So just certain parameters that are provided to all bidders equally and the same, and the report on your own specific bid. So as I mentioned, the process continues until there's basically an equilibrium between the number of tranches that are bid and those that are needed. So the auction is going to close on all EDCs at once, once the total excess supply in the auction is zero and the prices can no longer tick down. All the winners for a given EDC in an auction get the same final price, and the auction rules specify in some amount of detail how that price is determined on the basis of the bids received. Once the auction closes, the board has 2 business days after the close of the last auction to render a decision on the auction results. That being said, the board always has the option of rendering a decision on the results of each auction at different times if one were to close early and the other one much later. If the board does accept the results, then those results are binding on the winners at the BPS auction and on the EDCs. And at that point, the EDCs and the bidders have 3 business days to execute the supplier master agreement. And that includes providing any security that might be required under the creditworthiness standard of the agreement. At that point, the pre-auction security, so that's the pre-auction letter of credit that I was talking about, and for some bidders that may have to provide additional pre-auction security, that pre-auction security then expires upon execution of the agreement. For the pre-auction letter of credit, the certificate of expiration is returned with the letter of credit, and the letter of credit is canceled. And finally, the start of the supply period is June 1, 2018.
A brief introduction of myself. My name is Paul Cardona, and I've worked with Dr. Lacoste administering the BGS auctions for a number of years. I'm going to be handling the last 2 portions of the presentation today, specifically on the application process and information available made available to bidders as they evaluate the BGS auction opportunity. The application process is going to be just a brief overview. We will be providing a more detailed description of what is required in order to qualify to place bids in the 2018 BGS auctions at an additional webcast in late November. The BGS application process takes place online. It is in 2 parts. And as Dr. Lacoste mentioned, the BGS RSCP auction and BGS CIP auction are separate, but they run concurrently. This is true for the application as well. So bidders participating in the CIEP auction and the RSCP auction will be filling out 1 form. However, there are portions of the application that are specific solely to the BGS RSCP auction, and there are portions that are specific solely to the BGS CIEP portion. The process, the application process, is done almost completely online, where bidders provide information about the bidder and representatives for the bidder. You can upload documents supporting your application. These take the form of financial documents as well as inserts. And what inserts are separate Microsoft Word documents that applicants fill in, sign, scan, and upload to the online form. I'd like to note that signatures are not required in wet form or in hard copy form. Those can be scanned and uploaded to the application form. We do not need to receive the signatures at the BGS auction manager's office. However, during the Part 2 application period, as Dr. Lacoste mentioned, bidders are required to provide credit instruments in support of their indicative offer. These credit instruments are required in hard copy and will be submitted to the BGS auction manager's office in New Jersey. The application is accessed through the URL provided on this slide, bgs-application.com. It is separate from the BGS auction website. However, you can access the application website by going to the BGS auction website and clicking on the bright orange link in the upper right-hand corner. In order to apply to participate in the BGS auctions, bidders need to request an account. You do so by going to the BGS application website, clicking on the Get Account tab, and filling out the requisite information. Returning bidders who have participated in the online application process and prior BGS auctions will be provided with their credentials. Those will be provided to the main point of contact in those previous BGS auctions. If that contact has changed, please inform us of that fact by emailing us at bgs-auction@nira.com. If you go and you request an application account later today, those credentials will not be issued to you until closer to the opening of the online portal, which is scheduled for November 28th, so in about a month and a half. Those will be provided to you. The requirements for participating in the BGS auctions, particularly in the Part 1 portion of the application process, are very simple. We will ask for contact information for a number of individuals at the bidder, at the bidding entity. This would be the bidder team, which is comprised of an authorized representative and up to three nominees. These are individuals who represent the applicant during the auction process. So if there's anyone, the auction manager team cannot communicate with anyone not on the bidder team regarding your application. So if there are individuals that are necessary for the completion of the application process, they need to be named either the representative or the one of three nominees. We'll also ask for information for a legal representative in the state of New Jersey who would agree to accept service of process on behalf of the bidder. There's also the requirement that bidders provide contact information for a credit representative who would be able to answer any questions with respect to credit. There are no state licensing requirements in order to participate in the BGS auctions. However, the supplier must be a load-serving entity in PJM by the start of the supply period. If you are not a load-serving entity with PJM prior to the beginning of the supply period, you can make a certification in the Part 1 application that there is no impediment to you becoming a load-serving entity prior to the June 1, 2018 power flow. Filling out the application is very simple. You've probably filled out tons of forms online, very similar to what the Part 1 form is. There are three types of fields that you would interact with as the applicant. There are text fields where you would type in your name, the applicant's name, the representative's name, as well as information such as email addresses, physical addresses, and phone numbers. There are also what we call radio buttons. Radio buttons are buttons that are clicked in response to questions that, when responded to, will, in the affirmative, will expand the form and introduce fields that you would be required to fill out. For instance, we will ask if you're participating in the BGS RSCP auction. Clicking yes will expand that piece of the form with fields that are specific to the BGS RSCP auction. Should you click no on the radio button, you will be allowed to move on without filling in any of those fields. There are also locations for you to upload documents in support of your application. These will be marked with the label Choose File. Such files include the inserts that I briefly mentioned on a previous slide, financial statements supporting your application, as well as other documents at the end in the justification of omissions in support of your application. There are, at the bottom of the form, it's very intuitive. You can save to continue. You can submit your application. You can also print your application form if you would like to review it in hard copy. To aid in the filling out of the Part 1 form, the auction manager has made available a number of documents on the right-hand side of the form. These are in a blue rectangle, and they include a glossary with of terms, details on the Part 1 application review process, as well as instructions for filling out the application and login instructions. For individuals who have participated in previous BGS auctions, the requirements for the Part 1 application have not changed. As part of the Part 1 application, we will request certain financial information for the bidder or for a guarantor on whose financial standing the bidder would rely. That information includes financial statements such as annual and quarterly financial information, senior unsecured debt ratings. Additionally, entities that are relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor or foreign entities themselves required to provide additional information. As part of the Part 1 application, you will also be required to upload a number of certifications, and again, these certifications do not need to be sent to the auction manager team in hard copy form. They only need to be scanned and in some signed, scanned, and in some instances notarized and uploaded to the Part 1 form. These include certifications agreeing to the terms of the supplier master agreements as described by Dr. Lacoste early in the presentation and as available on the BJS auction website in the BJS proceeding tab, as well as the contract and credit page. In addition, you'll be required to agree to accept the applicable auction rules. So these certifications will need to be made separately for the BJS RSCP auction and the BJS CIEP auction. You will also have to agree to confidentiality of the list of qualified bidders and agree not to assign rights as a qualified bidder to another entity. Once you have completed the Part 1 application, you will become a qualified bidder, and as part of the notification of your qualification, you will be provided a list of other qualified bidders so that you can make a number of certifications that are required by the Part 2 application. The certifications accompanying the Part 1 simply state that you will agree to the confidentiality of that list of qualified bidders. Once you have successfully completed the requirements of the Part 1 application, you become a qualified bidder and are allowed to move on to the Part 2 application stage, in which point you will fill out the Part 2 form. The Part 2 form will become open to bidders before the holiday season at the end of December and will be due on January 10th. The architecture of the Part 2 form is identical to the architecture of the Part 1 form, where you will have fields, radio buttons, uploads, the toolbar, and the same basic functionality. Illustrative forms will be posted to the BGS auction website, so we will post illustrative Part 1 and Part 2 forms so that you can view the requirements of the applications. These are scheduled to be posted on or before the 19th of October. And when these forms are posted to the website, they will be an announcement will be sent to BGS auction website registrants so that you can go to the auction website to download those forms. Once you've completed the requirements of the Part 2 application, you become a registered bidder and are able to submit bids in the 2018 BGS auctions. The requirements to become a registered bidder include making certifications regarding associations and handling of confidential information. You must provide an indicative offer, that is the number of tranches at the maximum starting price and a value at the minimum starting price. The indicative offer at the maximum starting price for each is given separately for the BGS RSCP auction and separately for the BGS CIEP auction. This indicative offer will dictate the financial guarantees you are required to submit with the BGS CIEP auction or the BGS RSCP auction. It will dictate your initial eligibility in round one of the auctions themselves. Financial guarantees are different between the two auctions. For the BGS RSCP auction, you are required to provide a letter of credit in the amount of $500,000 per tranche of your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. Some bidders will be required to provide additional security, including a letter of reference or a letter of intent to provide a guarantee. The financial guarantees for the BGS CIP auction are a little different in that they only require a letter of credit and for an amount of $375,000 per tranche, and no additional security is required. So that concludes the overview of the application process. And in order to evaluate the opportunity, in order to decide whether or not you would like to participate in the BGS auctions, there's a number of information available to you One such source is the BGS auction website, and it's the central source of information for bidders to access information relating to the BGS auctions. As Chantal mentioned, as Dr. Lacoste mentioned before, the URL is www.bgs-auction.com. The site is very easy to navigate. There are a number of tabs with drop-down menus. You can search in the upper right-hand corner, and there's a sitemap in order to help you navigate the web page. Announcements are included on the right-hand side of the BGS auction web page, and they include alerts to upcoming dates and events. The announcements will be the same as those that you receive in your emails if you are registered to receive announcements from the BGS Auction Manager. If you are not yet registered to receive announcements, you can go to the BGS Auction website, click on Contact Us, and register through there. There is the ability to ask questions to the auction manager through the BGS Auction website. I'll go into more detail on that in the next slide. The auction documents that Chantal described earlier in the presentation, including the EDC's proposal, the auction rules, supplier master agreements, are posted to the BGS auction website. We will also make available to potential bidders this presentation, as well as an information packet with details about the auction process and the BGS auctions in general, to the website in order to help assess the opportunity of the BGS auctions. Finally, another central source of information is the data room, which I will go into more detail in a couple of slides. So bidder questions can be asked in a number of ways. They can be asked through the FAQ section of the website. I've provided the link on this slide so that you can go directly there and ask a question of the auction manager. You can also email us directly at bgs-auction@nira.com or attempt to contact us via phone. The most efficient way to reach us is probably through the auction website as well as directly through email. As appropriate, the auction manager may contact members of the EDCs regarding specific aspects of your questions. However, you will not receive a response directly from the EDC. That response will be relayed to the auction manager, which in turn will relay the response back to you, the bidder. Questions and answers that are posed will be posted to the BGS auction website. Any information identifying that would identify the bidder is removed prior to posting, so you don't need to worry about removing identifying information when you ask the question. We will do that for you. The next few slides pertain to the data room, and generally speaking, the data room is separated into two separate pages, a monthly data page and an additional data page, which I'll describe in more depth on the next two slides. The data room, on each data room, there is a data description, which provides details about each data series contained on that page. So we recommend for anyone on your team that plans to work with data, we would suggest that they download the data descriptions so that they can get the details on the data series that they are working with. A note on data generally, bidders may ask questions of the auction manager about various data series. However, the auction manager does not provide assistance in the interpretation and analysis of the data. So the monthly data room, as the name suggests, is updated on a monthly basis on or before the 17th of each month. The data page contains, in the aggregate, and for BGS CIP and BGS RSCP data categories, the following data categories listed on the left-hand side of this slide. So eligible hourly load, eligible peak load allocations, hourly load, peak load allocations, switching statistics. There's also a separate table that contains miscellaneous items such as daily zonal scaling factors. So the page is organized into tables where you have all the aggregate data in one place, then followed by the CIP data, then followed by the RCP data. The additional data room contains data that is not necessarily updated frequently, and the data series themselves may not be updated on the same basis. What I mean by that is that various data posted to the additional data page can be from different time periods. Included on the additional data page are switching statistics, hourly data by customer groupings, additional data by customer groupings, retail rates, renewable energy portfolio standards, as well as miscellaneous files. Most data on the additional data room was updated in mid-September, so what you will see if you go there today or in the near future, files that are up to date are most up to date. I will kind of delve in over the next few slides on some details regarding files found on the monthly data page as well as the additional data page. In order to assess the opportunity, the EDCs make available a number of different switching statistic files in order to assess migration in the auction, in the various auctions. Chantal has provided switching statistics earlier in this slide or in this presentation. You can go to the BGS auction data room in both the monthly data page and the additional page and additional data page to find switching statistic files. I've provided descriptions of those switching statistics files on this tab, but I would also suggest downloading and reviewing the data description documents so that you have a full description of what's included in these switching statistic files. A quick note on switching statistics data. The data is not, there's no standard date for which statistics are pulled across EDCs. So for a given month, the switching statistics can be from a different date for each of the four EDCs. In response to a question earlier in the presentation, the EDCs do make available a list of municipalities that have completed enrollment into in order to aggregate energy requirements of residential, commercial, and municipal accounts to purchase energy from third-party suppliers through government energy aggregation programs. This data is only available in list form, so what this means is that if you download the file, you will see a list of municipalities. You will not see any additional information. You will not see any load data associated with those municipal aggregation programs. The data has been updated recently and is live up to date as of September 2017. The EDCs typically update this list in January and expect to be able to do so for the upcoming BGS auctions. Found on the additional data page is also a BGS RSC pricing spreadsheet tool, which is intended for bidders to translate possible auction prices into BGS RSCP retail rates. This rate spreadsheet tool comes with a data with a description in PDF form above the Excel file. However, for explicit details on each EDC's rate design, please see each EDC's company-specific agenda posted to the BGS proceeding page of the BGS auction website. That will provide a detailed description of each EDC's BGS RSCP rate design. However, the RCB pricing tool does mimic the what is described in those company-specific agenda and has been updated to reflect what the EDCs proposed with their June 30th, 2017 filing. This file will be updated in early January once the EDCs have updated their generation and capacity obligations. So you will have this tool available to you during the actual auction. Finally, so the BGS auction website is a very good source of information to analyze the opportunity. However, I'd like to caveat that that is not the sole place where information is available that you would need to evaluate the opportunity. There are other sources in addition to the website, such as PJM's website, where I've provided links for their homepage, their reliability pricing model, GATS, where Chantal mentioned, where it relates to the RPS, as well as PJM's OASIS website. This should not be considered exhaustive, and bidders are responsible for doing their own due diligence in evaluating the auction opportunity.
Thank you, Paul. So that concludes the presentation portion.